Welcome to the Human and Technology Podcast. This podcast is for anyone who develops, distributes, or uses technology. For all those who always have the feeling that technology overwhelms or dominates them. For everyone who wants to know how to deal with technology in everyday life. For anyone who wants to understand what technology does to us and how we can get our lives back. This podcast is for those who want to make technology sexy. All the product developers, designers, UX, UI professionals, product managers, CTOs, and CEOs. And it is for you. My name is Dr. Peter Ryska. My friends call me Dr. Peter. I am your host, and I am happy that you are here. Hello, hello, and welcome to a fresh episode of the Human Technology Podcast. And this will be the final episode of my CES 2026 podcast. So I had three episodes before this one. So if you have not heard them, return there and listen to that. And today it is the final one on this year's Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. And I will talk about the open questions. Usually when I come home, always when I come home, I have open questions. I bring home the impression, very often the impression on what's hot in technology, what are the next things, what technologies, what issues will shape, will form, will dominate the discussions, the developments and technology in the upcoming months, maybe even years. This year, it was definitely robotics combined with artificial intelligence. And beyond that, I always bring home open questions. And those are the ones I will discuss today here. And I will start with a more generic overview. And then I will get into four questions I'm bringing home this year. And I will try to answer them, but they remain open questions under many aspects, so that, those are the things that I will think about and that I don't have answers for now. Maybe you have them, let me know. Maybe we as an industry, maybe we as a community will find them, or maybe they will remain open questions. I don't mind too much about this, but we will do this. Looking back at CES 2026, one conclusion is clear. The central challenge is not of a technological character, but it is more about relevance for us humans. The industries, they know how to build intelligent systems, software platforms, autonomous machines. What remains unsolved, from my point of view, is how to design them in ways that respect human cognition, human support, human capabilities, dreams, wishes, instead of undermining them. And how technologies create trust rather than dependency. This year's show showcased impressive progress, but it also reveals a growing gap between what is technically possible and what is meaningfully beneficial. From a human-centered perspective, which is always my perspective, the future of mobility and technology will not be decided by who has the most AI, the largest display, the greatest number of sensors. It will be decided by who understands human beings best. Our limitations, habits, emotions, our need for control, clarity, and dignity in interaction. Humane HMIs, shy tech, embodied interaction, and the return of physicality. They're not so much nostalgic counter movements, The revenge of the analog is not looking backwards. All these trends are corrective forces in an increasingly abstract digital world. CES 2026 was neither a failure nor a breakthrough moment. It was a moment of what I feel is a consolidation and maturation of technology. And the winners of the coming decade will be those who combine technological excellence with anthropological insights, strong user experience, governance, and ethical responsibility. Technology does not need to become louder, faster, or more autonomous. It needs to become better integrated into human lives. And in this sense, this year's CES sends a powerful message. The future does not belong to machines that replace humans, but to systems that understand, support, and empower them. As I said, I have four topics I'm going to talk about, four open questions with insufficient, incomplete, sometimes open answers. Number one, where is the automotive industry heading? And this beyond CES 2026 is one of the biggest questions we have, I have. How does it continue? The second question is, what role will CES play for the vehicle industry in the future? We saw significant changes to the years before, and so there will be more. There will be more changes. Where will automotive HMIs be evolving? Again, a question that was visible on the CES, during the CES, and that remains far beyond the show. And the final, the fourth one, what role will robots play in future households and in future production environments? Let's start with number one. How will the future of the automotive industry evolve? This question has been as relevant and at the same time as difficult to answer as it is today. Based on what I saw on my observations reinforced by broader industry developments beyond the show, the automotive industry appears to be at a strategic inflection point rather than following a clear development trajectory. We have changes on both sides, the technological sides, things like autonomous driving, like connectivity, things like autonomous driving, all these things, electric drivetrains, software-defined vehicles, all these are things that are significant changes in technology. And beyond that, we have business issues. The upcoming car industry in China. Chinese cars are pretty cool things. Some of them are awful, no question, but many of them are really, really cool cars. And how does that develop with the tariffs the US and also the European Union puts on the cars? Will that really protect the automotive industry or not? Will the European, the US, and specifically the German automotive industry be fast enough? Will it be flexible enough? Will it be adaptive enough for the future? And I see that the automotive industry is gradually moving away from a traditional product-focused manufacturing industry more toward a system and platform-oriented approach. Vehicles are no longer primarily defined by engines, chassis, body design, but by software architectures, by artificial intelligence, sensors, connectivity. And my feel is this shift is well understood in theory. Yet, in practice, many OEMs continue to struggle with adapting tools, processes, organizational structures to this new reality. And what CES clearly demonstrated is that there is not one single shared vision of the future car industry. Instead, the industry is fragmenting. Some players are moving towards service-based autonomy and fleet models, companies like Zoox, for example. Others continue to emphasize private ownerships enhanced by automation and AI. The Chinese companies that were there, BMW was there, they belong to this group. And mobility is expanding beyond the car into two-wheelers, micro-mobility, robotics, hybrid ecosystems. And that was almost half of the North Hall filled with companies that target into this direction. And this fragmentation suggests that the automotive industry is no longer a coherent entity, but rather a loosely coupled set of mobility domains, each following its own logic, pace, targets. And technologically, progress is undeniable. Our artificial intelligence, software-defined vehicle architectures, autonomy, sensor technology, HMI maturity, all that is advancing rapidly. Strategically, however, many traditional players appear more reactive than proactive. Particularly the OEMs, for me, the European OEMs, seem to be more like in a let's wait and see what happens kind of position, and then they try to follow the trends instead of setting the trends proactively. Platform providers from outside of the automotive domain, cloud providers, artificial intelligence companies, semiconductor providers, software companies, they are increasingly defining the pace and the structure of innovation. And the risk lies not so much in technological irrelevance, but in losing sovereignty over core value creation. The control over what's happening or what's developed might get lost for the OEMs. Another clear directional signal is the slow but required shift from pure performance metrics towards more human-centered differentiation. Comfort, cognitive load, trust, perceived safety, and the emotional quality of interaction are becoming decisive factors. This suggests that future competitiveness will depend less on pure engineering power and more on understanding how human behavior, psychology, and the overall contexts are areas for which the industry is not very well prepared up to now, but those are the core focus points that I see. So to summarize this one, and this is not really answering the questions, but where are we heading? Yeah. So and for me, this is not a single future. It's more like depending on where you are in the chain, where you are, and as far as location is concerned, where you are, what your focus point is, we have different parallel futures. We will see more platforms instead of just products, more ecosystems instead of isolated vehicles. We will head towards more software speed instead of hardware cycles. And this is my hope, we will go more toward human experience instead of technical specification battles. The open question is not whether this transformation will happen. It is already happening. The real question is, who will actively shape it and who will merely adapt to frameworks defined by others? In this sense, the automotive industry is currently less on a road, but more on a crossroad. The coming years will determine whether it evolves into a confident, human-centered mobility system industry, or if it becomes a hardware-focused supplier within somebody else's platform economy. Basically, the question, who is running the future automotive development, OEMs and first-tier suppliers, or the big tech and software platform companies? Second question, what role will the CES play for the automotive industry in the future? The role of CES for the automotive industry is no longer self-evident. This was clear this year with a very low number of OEMs, with a reduced number of first-tier suppliers showing up. Based on my observations and broader industry shifts, the question is not whether CES will remain relevant, but how and for whom it will remain relevant. The CES has clearly moved away from being a classic automotive stage, as it has been over a couple of years in, let's say, between 2010 and 2022. Yeah, that was the time when parts of the CES have been an automotive show. Yeah, but today, this year, absolutely obvious, it's no longer the place where OEMs comprehensively present the future of the car, showing vehicles on large-scale concepts. Instead, CES has become a more like a technological marketplace, a platform where enabling technologies like artificial intelligence, like software platforms, sensors, chips, robotics, and even HMI components, they are showcased independently of finished automotive products. And for technology companies, suppliers, startups, platform providers, this role is extremely valuable. It moves them forward. CES offers them visibility, cross-industry exchange, and access to decision makers. And that goes beyond the automotive domain, above the automotive industry. And for traditional OEMs, however, this shift creates tension. CES no longer guarantees control over the automotive narrative. If you don't show up, you're not part of the discussion. Where CES remains highly relevant for the automotive industry is in its function as a radar system for early signals. It is one of the few places where automotive decision makers can observe how quickly adjacent industries, artificial intelligence, consumer electronics, robotics, software, are advancing and how their innovation may disrupt or redefine mobility. CES does not show where the automotive industry will end up, but it reveals the focus, the forces, the energies shaping the terrain. In this sense, CES is less about validation, it's more about orientation. It's a place to identify weak signals, emerging dependencies, power shifts, especially the growing influence of non-automotive actors on car automotive value creation. So, at the very end, CES functions as a mirror. The reduced OEM presence was not caused by a loss of relevance of the show, but by the automotive industry ambivalence toward its own transformation. So everybody in the car industry is aware we are having a serious shift in technology and in business. And of course, it's easy then to cut the budgets and not show up. Yeah, but CES confronts with uncomfortable questions. Who owns the software? Who owns the user? Who defines the user experience? One example, Honda and Sony presented for the third or fourth time in a row the Afeela, which is a car where Honda does all the car things, the drivetrain and the suspension and the crash tests and the aerodynamics. And Sony, as a software and consumer-oriented company, they do all the software. They create the user experience. They define it. The question really is that the future model? That car companies become platform providers, rolling robots, and everything that is somehow creating user experience, usability, functionalities is done by software companies. And who controls this entire process? And I believe that the car industry is avoiding that mirror, that it is avoiding to have a reflection, to see itself in this environment. So how will it develop? From my point of view, it's unlikely that CES will return to a classic automotive show, not even in parts. It will be more like a cross-industry convergence platform. It will be a technological early warning system, a radar. And it will be a place where automotive companies can learn what they no longer automatically control. This is the big question that where CES might give answers. And for those willing to engage openly, the CES remains valuable, not as a stage for, let's say, finished answers, but as a space where the right questions become visible. The challenge for the automotive industry is not whether to attend CES, but whether it is prepared to face what the Consumer Electronics Show reveals. Question number three that I brought home. Where are automotive HMIs evolving? Where are they heading? What is the future of automotive HMIs? For me, this year, the future direction became clearer in its basic principles, but less defined in its final form, shape, Gestalt, as we say in German. Based on the signals observed in Las Vegas and broader industry developments, HMI evolution is no longer about adding new features and functions. It is about recalibrating and orchestrating the relationship between humans and increasingly intelligent systems. And orchestrating means that there is more than one instrument. There is traditional touch haptics interaction. There is physical haptics, active haptics as presented. There is speech. There is different real estates for interaction, for displays, the visual parts of this. And the question here really is, how can we orchestrate that? Which mode plays what role in which situation, in which context, for which user? And this is the future of automotive HMI. It's about this orchestration. It's not so much do we have a 12-inch or a 13-inch touchscreen. But it is more like how do we combine all the available HMI technologies into one system, one concept that allows an increasingly intelligent and allows to control an increasingly intelligent car. The open issues in automotive HMIs are moving beyond classic interface questions, screens, menus, buttons, toward more designing an ongoing relationship between a human and an intelligent vehicle. As systems become more agentic, more proactive, and more context-aware, HMIs must manage expectations, trust, responsibility. The core challenge is no longer how users operate functions, but how systems communicate intentions, boundaries, limits, states in ways humans can intuitively understand. And one of the clearest signals from CES is the gradual decentering of the visual interface. In the years before, there have been tons of concepts with pillar-to-pillar displays and then an additional one replacing the center stack and one on the in the steering wheel and then a head-up display, and all added up to huge amounts of real estate for displays. To me, it seems we have passed peak display. It couldn't get any bigger, and now we are returning to smaller display sizes and smaller display areas. And then HMIs are increasingly distributed across modalities. So it's not all about screens. It's about voice, haptic, subtle lighting, ambient light, sound, physical feedback, active haptics in seats, on buttons. Yeah. So seats, surfaces, glass surfaces, and ambient cues become communication channels. They transfer information from the car to the driver. And this shift reflects a deeper insight. Humans do not primarily experience the world through screens. And HMIs should not force them to do so. We are genetically, from a genetical point of view, identical with those that lived 12,000 years here in the jungle. And 70,000 years ago, we had the last dramatic genetical change. So we are fit into this environment. And there were no screens at that time in that environment. But we had complete communications, full on all channels, driven by human intelligence. And this is where the human mind, the human decision-making, the human senses, the combination of human senses, the orchestration is best in. With increasing automation, HMIs must support this transition from direct control to collaborative interaction. The vehicle is no longer a passive tool that we can control with our fingertips, but it's an active systems, and it will develop in the near future its own agencies, its own agentic AI. And HMI must therefore explain decisions, negotiate handovers of control in mixed driving situations. It needs to support situational awareness, especially in partially automated scenarios. And as I see the latest trends, we will remain with partial automation for a longer time. BMW and Mercedes just stepped back from their level 3 automation systems. So we will have level 2 with more and more and more functions in the near future. Plus that we will have level 4 systems like the Zoox and the Waymos in very controlled areas. But for private car ownerships, to me, it seems like it will be very hard to go beyond level 2. And this leads to shared driving tasks. And this leads to the need for transparency. It needs to be able to explain decisions. And this will become then core HMI requirements and not optional features. Another strong directional signal is the rise of liquid HMIs, what I call liquid HMIs. So the loss of the one-to-one-to-one paradigm, one device and one location for one function. This is gone. We will be able, in midterm, to control everything from every device we have. To control the car from the smartphone, to call the smart home from the car, to control everything with our PCs. All this is visible. And this is what I call liquid HMIs. And the interaction is then no longer bound to a specific screen or a physical location within the vehicle and beyond. Information can control information and control flows will jump across displays, will be in different devices and contexts inside and even outside the car. And this flexibility increases convenience, but requires a very strong user experience governance to prevent fragmentation and cognitive overload. And perhaps the most important shift is more a philosophical one. Automotive HMIs are slowly moving from feature-driven innovation towards human-centered maturity. The central questions are no longer what can we display or what can we automate, but what does the human need right now? What should remain implicit rather than explicit? When should technology step back instead of intervene? So, to get back to the original questions, where are automotive HMIs heading? Not toward a dominant interface paradigm, as I see it, but more toward a shared set of principles. From screens to embodied multi-sensory interaction, multimodality, from commands to conversation and collaboration, from visual dominance to calm peripheral perception, from fixed interfaces to contextual liquid systems. The open risk here lies not in technological failure, but in engineering arrogance. The assumption that more intelligence automatically leads to better experience. The opportunity lies in restraint, clarity, and a deep understanding of human limitations. Automotive HMIs are evolving toward less visibility, more intelligence, and more humanity. Whether the industry succeeds, it will not depend on its ability to innovate interfaces, but on its willingness to design for the first for the human, and not only for the technology. And the question is, does the automotive industry understand this shift from innovation of interfaces towards willingness to design for the human? And if it understands this, who will it be? Who will understand this one? Who has the deepest understanding in this? Let's move on to the final here, to the final one. What role will robots play in households and production environments? The increasing presence of robots raises an important and still unsolved questions. What role should robots play in human environments? While technological progress is visible, the gap between what robots can do and what they should do remains significant, especially in households and production workplaces. The German Chancellor just traveled to China with a business team, and there are videos where they saw a group of 20-25 robots doing some Kung Fu or Tai Chi or whatever exercises, totally in parallel. Nobody needs this, but it's a demonstration of what is possible. So technology is ready, and the question remains, where are the use cases and where is the real value that we can create with this? And in industrial manufacturing environments, the role of robots is relatively clear to me. Here, robots address concrete problems, labor shortages, physical strain, safety risk, the need for consistent quality, boring tasks, repetitive tasks, all that is obvious. And the CES showed a strong momentum toward a collaborative, task-focused robot, and they are working alongside with humans rather than replacing them. And in these contexts, robots make sense because the tasks are structured, environment can be controlled, success can be objectively measured, and in terms of productivity, safety, reliability. In contrast, the role of robots in private households remains far less convincing. Many of us still have lawnmower robots or floor cleaning robots. So household robots were shown, were presented, but many of these demonstrations were new and somewhat exciting, but not really valuable. The problem I see is homes are unstructured. They are emotionally charged environments. To be honest, I don't want to have an Android robot here in my home. Some device that stands in the corner and maybe shakes every now and then its head or its hands and doing things for me. I don't want this. Maybe I'm a boring old person, but for me this is pretty creepy to think about this. And robots that vacuum floors or mow lawns, they have gained acceptance because they solve clearly defined repetitive tasks and they do not look like humans. A critical issue in this area is the tendency to unnecessarily humanize robots. Humanoid forms, shapes, gestalt, facial expressions, clothing, social behaviors are often presented as a path to acceptance. For me, the strategy carries the risk of unrealistic expectations. First of all, emotional discomfort, the so-called uncanny valley, and at the very end, mistrust and distrust. Anthropomorphism may attract attention at the CES and trade shows, but it does not automatically translate into long-term usefulness or acceptance, especially not in the intimate environments of our homes. And the central question is not whether robots can be present everywhere, but whether their presence creates added value, creates real value. And in production environments, robots extend human capabilities. They're taking over the dangerous, repetitive, physically demanding tasks. In households, many robotic concepts appear to exist because they are technically possible, not because they are really needed, because they create real value. CES offered many examples of robots that were impressive to watch, but difficult to justify in everyday life. As robots become more autonomous, questions of trust, responsibility, control move to the forefront. In production environments, responsibilities can be clearly assigned and robot behavior can be constrained. In households, these boundaries quickly blur. Who is responsible if a household robot makes a wrong decision? How much autonomy is acceptable in shared human spaces? What if some part in the AI algorithm in my robot runs crazy and my robot starts being aggressive against the environment, against me? Who saves me from that? And these questions, they remained largely unanswered in Las Vegas this year. The answer to the question what roles the robots will play in households and in production environments may be a bit asymmetric. In production environments, robots will become indispensable collaborators, quietly embedded, purpose-driven, largely invisible when everything is functioning well. In households, robots will likely remain limited to narrowly defined tasks unless they can demonstrate clear, sustainable, real added value without emotional intrusiveness or unnecessary human imitation or creating an uncanny valley. The critical risk is not that robots will fail technologically, but that they will be conceptually misplaced, introduced where they do not belong, or designed to imitate humans instead of supporting them. We don't need the human 2.0. We are good as humans. So future robotics will not be decided by how many robots appear, but how well they respect human spaces, needs, and boundaries. If this episode raised your interest and you do not have my report from the CES 2026, send me a message over one of the channels, LinkedIn, or my email address, whatever, and you will receive your free copy in return. That's it for today. Thank you for spending time with me. I hope you were able to take something with you and do something for yourself that will be forever. For an ongoing exchange, you will find me on LinkedIn and on my websites, peter-rusker.com and beyond-hmi.de. Write me an email on the podcast at beyond-hmi.de. Tune in next time, take care, and stay healthy.